fasting as a Muslim, all of you doing this?
So if we come to Islamic laws, anyone who is portraying as a fasting person, a faster, as we would call in some languages, faster, the person is fasting. If his zahir, his openness, his physical appearance is as fasting, he is fasting. Behind the scenes, if he's doing something else, that is between him and Allah. Okay. But in general sense, he's fasting. And normally, it's only based in like eating and drinking. Normally, these are the only signs that you know that this guy is not fasting in his physical appearance. But apart from that, for a person who is fasting for Allah, there are a lot of conditions to be portrayed. Like, for example, you don't eat, you don't drink, you don't... do certain acts.
Yes.
The sins that are normal in other months, in this month, some of them might even break your fast.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the holy month of Ramadan is the only month where the ibadah does not interfere with your daily work compared to other acts of worship that are wajib, obligatory. For example, if you go for namaz, namaz takes 5 minutes of your day's work and you break that part and you pray. You see, Hajj, you have to leave certain days, you have to do Hajj, then you come back to your life. But Mahe Ramadan, the fasting, is the only act in Islam that doesn't interfere with your daily life. You see, it's an act that can be done upon another act.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I'm fasting right now, I can speak as well, I'm fasting right now, I can pray as well. In the same state, I can do many things. So it's not a direct interference to my daily work. So this is one of the good things that a lot of people have come up, that fasting is an obligatory action. At the same time, it's something that doesn't require a certain necessity to go out of your daily life.
That's right.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Inshallah, 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 you'll find your way.
Okay, how to keep the spirit of fasting during, and you know, day by day, you know, maybe the first day might be a little bit difficult for some people. Especially the new fasters, as you said, the new people who come, the new generation, the young generation who want to fast, girls and boys, okay? But day by day, it become easier for the people to do fasting. But I think the spirit of fasting on Ramadan must not be limited only to the holy month of Ramadan, isn't it?
Yeah.
After Ramadan, it has to be.
The essence itself is the month of Ramadan, but the preparation can start at a very early age.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we have in traditions that our Aime Masumin used to tell us that they used to teach their kids to pray at the age of 5, and they would advise us to teach our kids to pray at the age of 7.
Mm-hmm.
They should fast. They fast at the age of 7, and they told us to train our kids to fast at the age of like 9, for example. You see, obviously, before and after, depending on the gender and everything, has different sidelines. But in general sense, this is how we start. Apart from that, every year when the Mahe Ramzan comes, the holy month of Ramadan, before that we have Shaaban and Rajab, where the emphasis of fasting has been proclaimed in these 2 months. It is much better to understand the value of fasting before reaching it. Because if you want to understand the value of the holy month of Ramadan, is to understand the holy month of Shaaban.
Yes.
You see, as they say that the holy month of Shaaban is the Prophet's month.
Yes.
If you understand the Prophet of Allah and if you understand his actions during this month, you will understand much better the influence of Ramadan, the holy month of Ramadan, in the year and the fasting in this month.
Okay. So the preparations before that are really important. That's all right. Some people might ask and say that we fast during the holy month of Ramadan, but at the end of Ramadan, we are not changed. What is the reason? What might be the reason?
That is actually a very big problem if someone comes with that claimation and he says that Ramadan, the holy month of Ramadan, has not changed him. It's because he has not worked on those protocols that he was supposed to work on. He used to fast, but he was only physically refraining from eating and drinking. But the holy month of Ramadan, the fasting itself, is not only limited to eating and drinking. As I said before, there are some limitations that are kept during the month of fasting, and if you work on that, you will see the difference yourself. Because the holy month of Ramadan, as we see, is the only month where the doors of heaven are open, the doors of hell are closed, and shaitan is chained.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very practical and best way to approach the holy month of Ramadan. If you're able to work yourself in these chains that the shaitan before the month of Ramadan has captured you, you are able to restrain yourself, because one of the parts of fasting is restraining. If you restrain yourself properly and well, then after the holy month of Ramadan, you won't fall into the lies of shaitan again. Mm-hmm. But if you are not chained, then you have to be like very much specific that where are you going wrong? You might be fasting, but you might still be doing ghibah.
Yes.
Backbiting. You might be fasting, but you might be looking at the bad things that are around the road, or for example, anywhere. You see, your eyes are very free. They are not controlled. The hijab of the man is not portrayed. The hijab of the woman is not portrayed. You might be fasting, but there are a lot of things that, for example, I know some of the places where backbiting is very norm. It's a norm.
It's a norm, okay.
If you don't backbite, you are out of the society.
Okay.
You see? If you don't, for example, in other cities, if you don't drink, you see,
yes.
Alcohol, I mean, you are not part of the society. So these are kind of actions that you might be fasting during the daytime, but then when it reaches at the nighttime, you go and follow your desires. While one of the reasons of fasting is to restrain yourself from going to this kind of desires.
This is the question, that after breaking your fast, when iftar is done, you are still fasting.
Yeah.
Okay? The fasting of drinking and eating is finished, but the fasting of a spirit starts, okay?
Yeah.
Or the night. And this is important, I think, how to keep the spirit of fasting during the night too. But unfortunately, in some Muslim lands, you know, Ramadan, because it is the feast of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it is very much limited to the big tables of food, you know,
yeah.
Delicious food, colorful food, you know.
It's like you're taking a revenge from God to tell you fasting.
Yeah, that's all right. Okay, unfortunately. Any practical recommendation to keep our fasting strong during the month of Ramadan?
They say that in traditions we have found, as I said before, that whenever you want to enter any, for example, I'm using this clause of an example so that it's easier to understand. Whenever you want to enter an exam room,
yes.
You prepare before the day of exam.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you read all the required materials and prepare yourself to enter that month, that day of exam. The same goes for the holy month of Ramadan. If you want to enter the month of Ramadan, you need to start drawing out all the black oil and seeds from your heart and your body by doing certain activities that are recommended by the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salam.
Yes.
Alayhi salam. So one of those were to fast during the month of Rajab and Sha'ban. The a'mals, the recommended acts that we are supposed to do, for example, like giving sadaqah, praying the namaz of Ja'far al-Tayyar,
yes.
Which is one of the best, and it has been seen out for anyone who acted according to the way the namaz was prayed and the efficiency. One of the Hausa teachers, he also recommended in a certain way, and also we had some listeners' experience where he said that it was his first time to pray Namaz-e-Ja'far al-Tayyar during the month of Sha'ban or something, and before Fajr namaz.
Yes.
And whenever after praying that namaz, his behavior with his wife, with his behavior with his family, completely changed.
Okay.
And one of the things that was confirmed was this, that if you pray Namaz-e-Ja'far al-Tayyar, you will feel your essence in your daily namaz, daily prayers.
That's right.
Like the five-time prayer that we
pray. So these are the preparations before the holy month of Ramadan.
Yeah.
So
once you have like cleared out yourself, the difference you'll find out before the holy month of Ramadan. The moment you start approaching the month of Ramadan, you will feel the essence of fasting much more convenient and much more a lack of distraction and discomfort. Because one of the reasons, as they say this, is we to bring ourselves closer to the poor. It's one of the acts where the rich and the poor are on the same stage.
Yes.
You see?
That's right.
And when you fast, you are similar to the poor and you feel the hunger and the pain of the hunger and thirst that you feel over there.
The society.
Yeah. That's so right. you become a part of society, a bigger society.
Yes, that's all right. Okay. Thank you very much, Brother Suhail, for a nice elaboration of fasting of the Muslims. Why do Muslims fast? How to have a better quality fasting during the holy month of Ramadan. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min labani Ali wa Husayn wa Hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن.
On June 22, 2021, the U.S. government took down a range of Iranian news websites. The most prominent among them, Press TV, the country's 24-hour news channel in English. Press TV's users were faced with this message. The domain PressTV.com has been seized by the United States government in accordance with a seizure warrant pursuant.
Press TV do.
The channel was launched in 2007 with the motto of the Voice of the Voiceless. Since the very beginning, the news channel has always tried to shed light on major regional and global issues from perspectives either ignored or distorted by the mainstream media. Over the past years, the channel has repeatedly been subject to censorship on multiple platforms, including Twitter and Instagram, besides Google and its services. For example, it was in mid-January 2020 that tech giant Google permanently removed Press TV UK's YouTube channel. The channel had over 28,000 subscribers on its YouTube account at the time of its deletion.
all the Western propaganda about media freedom, freedom of speech, and so on, really is. The truth is they want their overweening narrative to completely dominate the public discourse so that decisions made about Iran, war and peace, sanctions, not sanctions, the nuclear deal or not, they want those decisions to be made with an uninformed public.
A few years earlier, in 2013, Press TV was forced off the air in the UK after media regulator Ofcom revoked its license for allegedly breaching the Communications Act. Shortly after, the channel was also taken off air in North America.
I don't obviously agree with everything Press TV do, but what they do is they provide a means for dialogue and discussion and understanding of the Middle East, particularly, and not only the Middle East, but many other world issues. Now, this vital conduit of news and information is being closed off by the British government, who are blaming it all on Ofcom. The British government won't take any responsibility for this outrageous, tyrannical act.
In fact, Press TV has had a long history of poor treatment at the hands of the US state. In just one case, back in January 2019, the FBI illegally detained Press TV anchor Marzia Hashemi for 10 days on her visit to the United States.
Situation in the United States that individuals can be detained, arrested without charge.
I was treated in many cases worse than a common criminal, as if I was a mass murderer.
I was kidnapped. Kidnapping, transferring, shackling, imprisoning, taking off my hijab, and so many other things, they can call it legal, but we know that it is not legal. Why is it that in the jails here, that 98.5, if not more, of the people I saw were Black Americans? Why?
While it's become an everyday challenge for Press TV to deal with problems caused directly or indirectly by the U.S. government on flimsy pretexts, a number of channels such as BBC Persian and Iran International, which seek subversive agendas inside Iran via spreading misinformation, are all immune to Washington's whims. A minor case of hypocrisy by the self-proclaimed champion of freedom of expression.
Any of these countries like China, Russia, Iran, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Cuba, they are demonized and their media outlets are portrayed as foreign agents, which is quite incredible. And we've seen incredible hypocrisy in the sense that not only does the U.S. government falsely dub these fact-oriented, totally fact-based media outlets as supposed foreign agents, but even on social media, which is ostensibly independent from the U.S. government, but really we know that many of these big tech corporations in Silicon Valley are U.S. government contractors that closely follow the U.S. government line. They have also been labeling foreign government-backed media outlets like RT, like CGTN, like Press TV, labeling them as controlled by the Russian government, as Google says, and Google owns YouTube. And we've also seen Twitter do the same thing, and Facebook.
The fact is, Press TV's independent journalism to set distorted narratives right across the region and the world has made the channel a strong alternative voice for the oppressed people. And that's not what the Americans can put up with.
In the Western media and the West-controlled media, you know, or the what they call the mainstream media, they portray a particular thing, a particular, you know, international problem in a particular this frame. And Iranian, the Press TV is challenging that. Probably they are providing an alternative thought. So naturally, this is a competition. So in that competition, Press TV is now facing the heat.
Case most notorious prisons.
By way of comparison, what they have done to Press TV is a larger scale operation of what they have done to the founder of WikiLeaks and other whistleblowers across the world. Muting alternative voices at any cost. American scholar Richard Falk believes that by shutting down Press TV, the U.S. is attempting to deprive Iran of its capacity to challenge hostile propaganda and put forth its own counter-narrative of controversial events, and more generally, of peace, justice, and democratic governance. When Press TV was established with the motto of News Anew, the aim was to present alternative news to its audiences, the kind of topics and stories that some Western governments do not want people to know about. In late 2021, Press TV was honored to receive an award from Yemen's Prime Minister Abdulaziz bin Habtour for its prominent role in standing by the Yemeni people and exposing the crimes of the U.S., Saudi, Emirati-led aggression since the beginning of the war. That's why Yemen is rarely being mentioned by the mainstream media. And when mentioned, it's usually through distorted lenses. As a media at the service of the resistance movement, Press TV has been always lauded by freedom-seeking nations. Following a visit to Press TV on April 7, 2022, Cuban ambassador to Tehran, Alberto Gonzalez Casals, tweeted, "Today I met the vice president and director of the prestigious Press TV and Hispan TV networks. I thank both of them for their active participation in the media marathon against the U.S. blockade. An extensive program of bilateral cooperation awaits us." Press TV invests full-heartedly in efforts to find out the truth, no matter what that would cost. Trying to reach that goal in some of the world's most volatile conflict zones, Press TV personnel Maya Nasser, Sayed Farhad Taghaddousi, Habibullah Hussein Zada, and Serena Shim made the ultimate sacrifice and lost their lives to reveal what is withheld from a global audience. Despite all the problems and sanctions caused and imposed by the West, Press TV will pursue its mission of being the voice of the voiceless with full force. The channel has just turned 15, and this is just the beginning.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is for a better life from IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayed Mahdi Tawakkol. I am at your service to talk about another strategy that helps us enjoy a more appropriate life based on the concepts of the Quran and Islamic narrations. And today's topic is about being thankful to God. Having a decent and correct lifestyle is never separated from being connected to God. If we have only a worldly perspective and neglect the spiritual aspect, we will surely be upset about many things. I mean, if we only pay attention to the material aspect of life, we cannot enjoy a suitable and ideal life. Every blessing we get in life is given to us by God and by Allah's will. So we cannot ignore God's role in life. Without God's permission and without His will, man cannot achieve any result even if he tries his best. This is what a monotheistic man should keep in his mind. A man who has faith in Allah should know that Allah is the source of every blessing, achievements, happiness, and success. This is what Allah says in Surah Nahl, verse 53, وَمَا بِكُم مِّن نِعْمَةٍ فَمِنَ اللَّهِ. And whatever of blessing you have is only from Allah. Therefore, in order to benefit from a better life, we in the first step must improve our relationship with God. As soon as we see that the blessing is coming, we should be totally thankful to Allah. Another fact about the blessings that come to us is that blessings often come to a person gradually, little by little. For instance, it doesn't often happen that a person who needs more money suddenly gains a lot of wealth.
or someone who doesn't have a house suddenly gets a big house, or someone who doesn't have a good job gets a lucrative job with a high salary just in a short time. It usually does not happen. God's blessings come to man gradually and step by step. Therefore, when we feel that the doors of divine mercy have been opened to us, and when we sense that the breeze of mercy is blowing, we should increase our relationship with Allah, thank Him, and request Him to give us His mercy more and more. It is quoted from Imam Ali to have said regarding this matter, إِذَا وَصَلَتْ إِلَيْكُمْ أَطْرَافُ النِّعَمِ فَلَا تُنَفِّرُوا أَقْصَاهَا بِقِلَّةِ الشُّكْرِ. When you get only a small favor from God, or in other words, when you sense that the beginning of Allah's mercy is coming to you, do not push them away through the lack of gratefulness. Imam Ali means that when man realizes that the mercy is coming, he should go after it and try harder to benefit more from that blessing, and hope that this beginning will continue and that blessing will become a more complete and a wider blessing. And one of the ways to increase that blessing is to give a full thank to God in the first phase. This is what a wise man should do. I mean by a wise man someone who knows that blessings are always from God. Therefore, a wise man has the duty to consider the role of God very prominently. A wise man doesn't think that a blessing that has come to him is in the form of luck or because he is lucky. Of course, next to thanking Allah, one should also use his efforts to be able to increase that blessing. But however, being grateful to Allah should not be dismissed at all. Not thanking God sometimes causes that blessing to go away and man becomes totally deprived. Let me make an example to bring this fact closer to mind. We can say blessings are like a flock of birds. When a number of birds sit on a tree branch, the rest of birds gradually could follow them and fill the branches of the tree. But if the first flock of the birds hears or sees an abnormal sound or become afraid of someone, they run away. And as a result, the rest also follow them and the tree will become empty of them. The blessings are also like this. This is also what Allah says in the Quran in chapter Ibrahim, verse 7. As Allah says, وَإِذْ تَأَذَّنَ رَبُّكُمْ لَإِنْ شَكَرْتُمْ لَأَزِيدَنَّكُمْ. Remember when Allah announced that if you give thanks, I will increase my blessing upon you. وَلَإِنْ كَفَرْتُمْ إِنَّ عَذَابِي لَشَدِيدٌ. And if you are ungrateful, my punishment will be severe. The severity of the punishment can mean that God takes that blessing back from man and never returns it again. Because not giving thanks is a sign that a person does not deserve that blessing. And apparently, God does not give His blessings to unworthy and irresponsible people. Allah's blessings usually come to the competent and qualified people, not those people who would misuse it or disregard the role of God in those blessings. This point should also be noted. In some cases, when we do not show gratitude for God's bounties, the blessings may not be taken away from us, but instead another blessing that we already have may be taken away from us instead.
The please send any suggestion, any idea to our email that is englishradio@irib.ir.
For example, if a person is looking for a good job, God encompasses him in his blessing and he may get a call from a good company for an interview. This is natural that this call can be a bridge to get a good job. Here man should thank God and knows that this blessing is from God. But if he ignores the presence and the grace of God, although it could be possible that he would be accepted in that interview and be employed in that company, but in return another blessing may be taken away from him. For instance, he may get sick and loses another source of income and so on and so forth. However, we do not know by being ungrateful what we will miss or when a blessing will be taken away from us. Therefore, reason dictates that we should give thanks for every blessing we have so that at least we do not expose ourselves to divine punishment that could be in the form of deprivation of another blessing. No good nor bad thing will take part in our life by chance. Everything that happens in life is due to a series of reasons. And those reasons are arranged only by the permission of Allah. The role of God should never be ignored in the arrival of blessings and also in the elimination of problems. That even the elimination of problems is another form of blessings as well. Just like the occurrence of an event that brings happiness to a person is a favor from Allah, the disappearance of an unhappiness from life is also a blessing and a favor from Him as well. And in both cases, we have to show gratitude to Allah and do not disregard His role. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, He knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, He knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, He knows. Every thought I have and every word I share, He knows. Allah knows.
Everyone has a beloved. And you, dear friend. But I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio, for those who seek the truth.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son, he's really in fond of football and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio.
A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Islamic Upbringing. Today we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Naqvi. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
The listeners, Professor Naqvi is a faculty member at the Al-Mustafa University, and we have had this pleasure to have him in the studio. We, in this program, discuss your problems, questions related to the Islamic upbringing and different topics which have a very great deal with the Islamic upbringing of children. And the answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad and his family, may peace be upon them. Well, Professor, in our previous episode, you said that love is not something that you only see the good part of the story, but there's also some bad part of the story. Don't you think the children who grow up with the concept that love is all to be on cloud nine and love is all to be, seeing good of the other person always, and then when they get into a relationship, when they get into a married relationship, they actually face serious problems when they actually see other part of the partner as well. Do you think this problem mostly exists with the children who have not been actually brought up the way? Understanding love includes all. As you said in previous episode, that Allah sees everything and still He loves us.
Yes, very so, because most of the times when we enter into a relationship with the opposite sex, especially, it's because of the apparent features. We don't go deep down into the character and personality of the other person. Apparently, there's all good feelings around, and we deem those good feelings to be feelings of love and compassion, but that's not the case. It's basically based on our instincts that we reach out to the opposite sex because we are inclined to do so. As human beings having those animal instincts, but the human part, which is above that, which can take a person above the
to level higher levels,
to higher levels, and even above the levels of angels.
Yeah,
that human nature, that true divine nature, that beautiful nature. Of course, those instincts are part of that. It's a whole package. Those instincts are also a part of that beautiful creation of Allah Almighty. They have to be there. You cannot negate them. You cannot say, no, we don't want that. When we're talking about those feelings of apparent compassion and love and whatever we feel, that is also a necessary part of our character, of our personality. That is required. But if we want to have a good relationship, we have a positive relationship, a constructive relationship, we have to see both aspects. There's no human being who's going to be perfect in all aspects, but when we are going for a relationship, we should not go after the apparent features. People who are, for example, the celebrities, for example, they are supposed to make themselves look good because they get paid for looking good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's their job. It's their profession.
Yeah.
They want to promote
but
themselves.
But this never means that their entire life is this.
Deep down, they may be not good people. They may be greedy people. They may be people who are deceitful, who are whatever. So it's not just apparent features you're attracted to. That is also, as I said, a part of it, but it's not the whole part. The whole part is below the surface. And what we should be looking for in other people, especially for the sake of entering into a
married
relationship
life.
And a married life, it is important that we see that true character inside, the knowledge, the positive feelings and emotions one has. Can I live with a person who is always looking down to me, down upon me as a second-rate thing, who he or she wants to manipulate for his or her own self? I mean, I need a person who can empathize with me, who can feel with me, who can have, is accepting how I feel.
Yeah.
If a person is always wanting to impose his feelings and thoughts upon others, I can't bear such a person.
Yeah.
So I need to find out if that person is such. Maybe in the beginning he or she is showing off himself or herself to impress me, but at the later down the road I'm going to get into problems. So I have to find the real person inside. And of course, every human being has positives and negative aspects. You need to understand those, because when you go into marriage, for example, then you can't
change it. You actually come across a lot of things and you understand a lot of stuff that you have never understood before. Well, Professor, we would like to talk more with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I am Zainab with Professor Naqavi, and we are discussing about love that we teach to our children, that we need to teach to our children. So, Professor Naqavi, you have helped us understand that we got to teach our children to love people the way Allah loves us. Allah also sees our bad part. Allah also sees our worst part. And still He forgives us. Still He is with us. Still He showers His blessings over us all the time. So, but we are not, we fail to make people understand this. We fail to make our children actually realize this, that you got to be loving people. You got to be accepting others with their bads. So how is it possible? What makes it easy for us as parents to teach this thing to our children?
It is important that we practice what we claim and profess. When I want to show how I love, how my child should love others, I should show him or her that how I am loving him or her. How do I express my feelings to him? Sometimes we go to the extremes. Either it's we completely forget the wrongdoings of our children and we start, you know, pampering them and, you know, supporting them in every wrong activity they do. That is one extreme. The other extreme is that we scold them for each and every wrongdoing they do. So these are two extreme things which happens,
And that's what kind of mentality they develop as they grow up.
But when we keep to the middle path and we say that we express our love for them, we express that we...
And we be moderate.
We say that we love you, but we don't like the action which you did. And as we said previously, the action which we do not like is because we want to show to him or our child that we love him, and therefore we don't want him to do something wrong, because that is which is going to affect his character, which is going to have a bearing on his life. We don't want him to go down that wrong path.
Yeah.
So we say, despite the fact that you're doing, we love you, but we don't want you to do such and such thing, because it will be diminishing for your character, diminishing for your future. So the love that we express is we accept that number one, the inner beauty of the human soul has to be respected in any case, whether it's your own child or is anyone else's child. When it comes to your own child because he is something special or she is something special in your lives, it's because he or she belongs to you, he or she is your offspring, is a produce of your body and your soul. It's a part of you. So you need to take special care, but the special care is that you, when you want
also
to
also express actually your anger or you know, when you're not agreeing with something, your disagreement in a particular way. Well, Professor, we'll discuss more with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Raise your children to have three features: love for your Prophet, love for his household, and reciting the Quran."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, and we have had the pleasure to have Professor Nakavi with us in the studio, and we are discussing the important topic of love to be taught to children, especially the teens.
When we, for example, I always quote the example of a pigeon. When we want the pigeon, when it's young, we normally what they do is they, those who breed pigeons, they cut off the wings, the newborn's wings. So when he grows up, he develops new strong wings with which the pigeon can fly higher. So when we are able to do that with respect to our own children, I mean, it may feel painful. It will be painful for the child. It's like giving bitter medicine to your child, despite the fact that he is crying and doesn't want to drink it. But you, because of your love for him, you want him to drink that medicine because you want him to become better.
Yeah.
So if you want to, if you don't do that, if you don't try to control him in a manner that he may feel bad about it, but you need to impress upon him or her that we're doing this for your benefit. We're doing this for your
to take you out of sickness.
Well-being. You need to fly high, and to be able to fly high, you need to be. Control yourself. So when the time comes, you can fly. At this time, you're going to fly. I mean, many children, they want to do things which are things which grown-up people need to do, can do. But they want to do things. I mean, for example, we had a video some time ago that that's a huge landlord was sitting in the car. A big car, a huge car, and a seven-year boy was driving, and he was sitting beside him. Now, there were many comments on the tweet, on the Twitter, that why is he's a member of the parliament maybe, and he's allowing his child of a seven-year-old child to drive a huge car, putting his life to danger. Now, what's happening? The child would have said, Baba, I want to drive your car. He said, okay, why not? So that's pampering.
To be at the service of the child all the time is pampering.
So you're trespassing upon, you're trampling upon the law, you're trampling upon the fact that, God forbid, he can take you into the ditch.
He cannot see the dangers that you as a parent can see.
So we need to, you know, control things, and we need to tell our child that because we love you, we want you to become strong. But when things to be done are to be done at their proper time, and you need to get prepared for that.
All right. So, Professor, to put everything together, we have said so far, first of all, we have to teach our children, especially our teens, because teens are the ones who actually go on judging people apparently, that judgment on the basis of apparent features is not enough. You got to take a deep dive into the inner features, into the inner attributes of a person, so that you can actually know what kind of person it is. And then you should not confuse liking with loving, because loving is something that also includes the bad part of the person. You actually love someone with goods and bads, all the things. And such children do not develop problems in the married life or in the life ahead when they get into relationships. So, but now what in this episode was much more clearer was that when you teach your child to love people with their goods and bads, that never means that when people are doing wrong with you, do not be showing that disagreement. Do not be showing you're not happy with it. So what is important is that to show your agreement and disagreement all the time, but in a respectful way. So how much is respect important over here?
Yes, it's very much important. It's like one of the hadiths which we have. It says, "Ahabbu ikhwani." I think it's from Imam Hassan Askari alayhi salam. "Ahabbu ikhwani man ahda ilayya uyubi." My best of friends is a person who presents my wrongdoings, my mistakes as a gift to me.
All right.
In a wrapping, in a gift wrapping.
Exactly.
In a sweet coating. I want to present a bitter thing, but I want the person to not to lose his respect and his self-pride also. I want to give him dignity, and I want to perform present that to him, even my child, that, look, you are making a mistake. It's a bitter thing I'm talking about, but I need to maintain his respect also.
Yeah. Oh, well, Professor, thank you so much. We'll talk more about respect in the upcoming session. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
Eyes of Truth.
Palestine is of great importance to the world's media because of the events and developments that take place there every day. The Israeli occupation leaves no room for the Palestinians to spend a single day without inconveniences, and it does it through various means of repression, murder, confiscation of land, and desecration of sacred sites. And it makes it look like the Palestinians are the bad guys and the Israelis the good ones. This campaign of deliberate misinformation continued for decades until the day came that the Palestinians could provide a narrative that debunked that of the occupation. Through local media, they reached out to the world, communicating their message, all the while aware of the risks involved.
As we know, there are a number of attempts to control countries by occupying the headquarters of television or the occupation of public broadcasters. Israel was working on this aspect to hit the Palestinian media from the first moment through the creation of fear. These steps have failed as of the start and middle and end of this operation because Palestinian media was ever present, always at the scene. They plan for every upcoming Israeli operation, and the way we can tell something is going on is when Israel starts to attack or bomb the media and bring about fear and confusion.
Israel's branding of itself before the civilized world is a civilized and developed country with a national humanitarian project. I think the Palestinian press has managed and operated first and foremost based on a national theme dedicated to the homeland and national responsibility. We portray the image as it is. When Israel targets civilians and children, bombards houses, mosques, hospitals, organizations, and besieges an entire people, we inform the civilized and free world about what Israel is doing. O civilized people and free nations, this is what Israel is doing to us.
What distinguished Al-Aqsa Media Channel in this war was the influence it had on the Zionist front. We were able, by the grace of God Almighty, to infiltrate Zionist media channels and broadcast to the resistance. As you know, the Zionist government and media follow Al-Aqsa Space Channel, and this is confirmed by a Zionist analyst. We could enter homes outside Palestine on TV and radio and show how the resistance succeeded. And this got into the minds of the Zionist enemy within their own homes and influence their policies as part of the psychological warfare that took place in the 2014
war. This is what the Zionist occupation did not want their own people and the people of the world to see, that the Palestinian press has credibility over the news coming out of the Zionist press, which came from statements made by Israeli settlers. They don't have credibility, but the people believe Palestinian media, and this is the fruit of our determination and perseverance.
The Israeli occupation and its army first tried to keep the media away from the scenes of carnage during the 2014 Gaza war. But when that didn't work, they went after the journalists.
some of the most important facilities destroyed by the Israeli occupation in 2014 were the five Al-Aqsa Media Network facilities.
The headquarters at Burj Al Shuruq Financial Management Office, the offices at Al Nasr, and the office you are at now were all targeted, as well as the broadcast center.
We all felt like this was the end of us when the broadcaster was targeted. But we don't believe that we are more important than our children and our homes, and the future of Palestine and our feelings do not shy away from embarrassment. Our purpose is that our message to the people should not be disrupted, because we believe they need us every second. We were back on air after a few hours of the attack, which was met with a positive response from the community.
The Al-Aqsa Media Network had aired resistance operational information that allowed the Palestinian resistance to defeat a group of Israeli soldiers. An operational failure for Israel was not an option, and so they had to put a stop to the leaking of the truth to the outside world, and then to replace the truth by way of omission or denial.
Repeat with me, Allah the Almighty, Allah the Almighty, Allah the Almighty. No true God but Allah. Al-Qassam brigades have just captured a soldier. Allah the Almighty, Allah the Almighty, praise to be Allah. Let those wounded people at Al-Shaja'iyah rejoice tonight as Al-Qassam brigades captured a soldier.
Those words that prompt me to stand and salute Ez al-Din al-Qassam brigades and the souls of their hero martyrs, I greet you from the heart. This is a victory speech that we have started sharing on this blessed night. All respect and salute is due to the Ez al-Din al-Qassam brigades. We will start commentating after a short interval. Stay tuned. That which was reflected through this war, that the Palestinian narrative is credible when it comes to news, we were keen about that. When the Zionist enemies said that five people were killed, we would replay the same information, but without exaggeration of such, reporting that in fact 50 were killed, and we believed that the narrative of the resistance that we knew was genuine. When the Qassam Brigade said they killed 8 Israeli soldiers in Nahal Az, we published it, and this was validated by the Zionist enemy later when they were forced to then confess that indeed 8 of their soldiers were killed. We believe the resistance narrative because they are entitled to be believed.
We believe we have a revolutionary privacy that distinguishes us from others. Frankly, we all received threatening letters to the order that several houses of colleagues were pounded with bombs. One of our colleagues in radio was bombed directly by an F-16 fighter jet. This man was a journalist who was not engaging in any resistance but targeted due to his employment.
The Al-Aqsa Media Network was but one of 19 media organizations broadcasting from the Gaza Strip, which were bombed, leaving them partially or totally destroyed. Al-Shaab Radio was one such network building reduced to rubble.
We tried to take with us some devices, such as a transmitter, which is an expensive device that a radio broadcast relies on. I remember at one time, a colleague started to walk upstairs when all of a sudden, an unmanned drone fired rockets at our building. We had to escape the building with no time to take anything with us, not even archives or any electronic device. Conditions were extremely bad when we were leaving, as some were injured due to the panic and stumbling around at 3 o'clock in the morning, seeing nothing in front of them. The tower we worked in after being hit collapsed into debris. When we couldn't grab anything from inside the radio station, we thought we had lost our important archives. We believed we had lost a voice for the people, months of work.
Another Palestinian media organization assaulted by the Israeli forces was a national agency which provides services to local and international TV stations. This particular site was filmed by a surveillance camera while under attack by Israeli warplanes
that let fly several missiles, which decimated the area, compelling and hard evidence of a war crime.
We were offering round-the-clock coverage of the deadly night, which they targeted more than 30 houses,